misbehaving. They're just behaving.
Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you.
Welcome to this episode of Ain't Misbehaving.
I'm Dr. Louisa, and I'm here to talk about your pets, some problems you may have, and some things you can do.
I'm a veterinarian with a special interest in behavior and have been helping people with their pets for over 30 years. My hope is to help you with your own interspecies relationships.
Today, I want to take you to a little bit of Africa in the heart of Washington State.
But first, here is this episode's bonus question.
Today, little Frederick and his mother visited a school and a family. While they were there, they saw a band, checked out the litter, and noticed a sleuth standing nearby. Later that day, they watched an army and a troop for quite a while and noticed they were standing beside a battery. As they were leaving to go home that day, Frederick and his mother saw a party just near the den and were indeed very happy. So what was happening here? Well, stay tuned for the answer at the end.
Today, I want to take you to a little bit of Africa in the heart of Washington State. My guests are Diana Goodrich and Aaron Zamzo. So, hello there.
Hello.
So, Diana, Aaron, can you tell me a little bit about this little bit of Africa?
Absolutely. So we are a chimpanzee sanctuary in Cle Elum, Washington, just outside of the town of Cle Elum. And we currently care for 15 chimpanzees, as well as 3 cows on site. and the sanctuary has been in operation since 2008. So we actually just celebrated our 16-year anniversary of the arrival of the first group of chimpanzees.
Oh, wow.
And they are all in the... Yeah, thank you. It does feel like a big reason to celebrate. That group is all in their 40s now. And then we have another group of 9 who are in their mid-30s. So it's kind of a retirement home for them and a chance for them to really be chimpanzees in the fullest sense possible in captivity.
Wow. You know, because when I think of chimpanzees in Eastern Washington, I think about Roger Fouts and Washoe. And I know that they had... a place at the Central Washington University. Is this connected in any way to that project?
Not, well, it is in some ways, in actually a lot of ways. The chimpanzees who lived on campus there were a group of 5, Washoe and her family, and none of those chimps live at our facility. So there are 2 that are still remaining from that group of 5, and they're living at a sanctuary in Canada, actually outside of Montreal. But a lot of the folks, including myself, who work at Chimpanzee Sanctuary Northwest got our start there. So my husband and I, and we're the current co-directors of Chimpanzee Sanctuary Northwest, met there in grad school and worked with Washoe when she was still alive and the 5 chimps there. And that's really how we got our start in advocacy and sanctuary work. And so there are no chimpanzees living on campus there anymore, but the academic program still exists. So students can come from all over the world and get undergraduate and graduate degrees in primate behavior. And so we benefit from that by having student interns at our sanctuary.
Well, that works out well.
It is. It works out very well for all of us. And it's actually amazing to see what those students go on to do. A lot of them have gone on to other sanctuaries and done incredible things. And it's an honor to be able to have them get their start at our sanctuary.
Yeah. So there are other sanctuaries in the U.S. Are you connected? Do you share information?
Yes, absolutely. We're trying to do more and more of that. In fact, in just a few days, we're going to go down to Los Angeles and meet with a few of the other accredited sanctuaries as part of the North American Primate Sanctuary Alliance and talk about proactively working to help the remaining chimpanzees that we're aware of that could use sanctuary placement in the next decade.
If the chimps in your sanctuary didn't come from Central Washington University, where did they come from?
The first group came from a private facility in Pennsylvania called the Buckshire Corporation. And that facility was more or less a holding facility. So they owned the chimpanzees and they would lease them out to different laboratories over a period of a few decades. And at one time they had 72 chimps there. And in 2007, when Keith LaChapelle, who's the founder of Chimpanzee Sanctuary Northwest, when he was getting started or kind of finishing up the process of building the sanctuary, there were just seven chimps remaining there, and they were looking to place them at a sanctuary. So that's the first group. And then Erin might be able to talk about the second group because she was very involved in getting them here to the sanctuary.
Yeah, we've been looking to move more chimps to the sanctuary for some time and then talked to some different labs over the years, but it can be quite a process. And we ended up connecting with a facility in Southern California that was actually originally kind of changing management and then actually ended up being taken over by California Fish and Wildlife and closing. They just lacked, they were in the mountainous area, sort of north of Los Angeles, and fire and flood danger was very real. They'd have to been evacuated, and there are many different types of species of animals there, and doing a mass evacuation on, you know, 400 animals is no small undertaking. And there were, what, 42 chimps there originally, Diana, is that correct? So in 2019, we were able to move one group up here of three, the summer of 2019. And then 2 years later, we were able to move a group of six up here. And since that time, those two groups have integrated. So those chimps were born into the laboratory stock, if you will. They were sort of bred and born by a lab, but they were, that facility closed before they were actually used in any clinical trials. So they were moved to this facility in Southern California, which arguably was way better than being in a lab, but it wasn't quite the same as a sanctuary. So it was a sanctuary of sorts, but they just did not have the ability to continue care, really.
So do most of the chimpanzees in the sanctuaries around the U.S., do they come from a laboratory background?
The vast majority do, yes, because that was the greatest use of chimpanzees in the U.S., which there aren't chimps being used in invasive research any longer for a few different reasons. So there were a lot of chimps that were kind of available to be retired into sanctuaries. But there's also, you know, chimps were used in entertainment and kept as pets as well. So there are chimpanzees in sanctuaries that have that background. In fact, a couple of our chimps here have that background before they were sold into research.
So keeping a chimp as a pet, I mean, that can't even be legal, can it?
It is state by state laws that determine whether it's legal or not. So it is still legal in some states right now. In Washington, it is not. And the majority of states now, it's not legal. And it's also now illegal because of their endangered species status to transport them across state lines for commercial reasons. So it used to be that there was this large breeding facility in Missouri, and that's where most of the so-called pet chimps came from, and they would be able to sell them across the country. But because of the uplisting of chimpanzees to endangered, which really just happened in 2015, including captive chimps within that. It made the pet industry basically obsolete. And so there are still some that are pets, but not near as many as there used to be.
Yeah, well, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me because, I mean, they're certainly so cute and cuddly. And, you know, that's what we see in the movies, you know, Bedtime for Bonzo and all that kind of stuff. But those are babies. Those aren't, you know, those aren't adults. And how old are they when they do become, you know, adults? About, is it like 10 or is it more like human aging?
Oh, it's younger than humans. Diana can probably answer that a little better than I can, but they go through a process of reaching sexual maturity and, you know, becoming into that adulthood. So it's slower than a lot of species, but it's not as old as humans. But the behavior, you know, generally will change and they'll start to behave more like adult chimpanzees. And that can happen anytime between 7, 8 years old, 10 years old to, you know, in their teens. And I think sometimes that's why people get away with it for so long, because they'll have a chimp until they're 14 or 15. And like, oh, there's no problem until there is. And it's so not in their nature to be in a pet type environment, you know, not without their own kind.
You know, not a good thing for them, but it's not a good thing for the people who have them, because, you know, it's like living with a teenager that is, you know, 2-3 times your strength.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And even they say when a chimp is around 4 or 5, they have the strength of an adult human man and they have the energy of a chimpanzee. So that combination does not make a good pet. There was a pet chimpanzee in Oregon.
Yeah. The other day, I think it was about five or six years ago when that happened. Yeah.
And so it's illegal to own a chimp in Oregon, but this chimp had been grandfathered in to the laws because he had been in this woman's home for quite a while. And like his end was very typical, really, and tragic. He ended up being shot by law enforcement because the owner was afraid for her life. I mean, it's just a example of why chimpanzees should never, ever live in a human home, and why we're at the sanctuary, we just take safety so seriously, and we never, you know, go into the enclosures with the chimpanzees and make sure that they have social companions that they can interact with, and they don't need to rely on humans for any kind of physical contact.
I was reading on your website, which is chimpsnorthwest.org, chimpsnw.org.
Right.
You lay out, you know, what the volunteers do at different levels of volunteering, and none of them have direct contact with the chimps. Maybe, what would they call it? A knuckle touch? Was that?
Mm-hmm. Knuckle rub.
Knuckle rub. Yeah. Yeah. So again, you know, it's truly for the safety of both the humans and the chimps.
Yep. Absolutely. And, you know, they're rough with one another. Erin can attest to that, having stitched up many injuries.
Chimps get kind of this bad rap as being like, you know, super mean or aggressive. It's chimps being chimps. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, it's in their nature. And we so often as humans want to sort of recreate these animals in our own image and form them to our needs or projections of what they are. And so, you know, we get a lot of comments on there's a daily blog, which is amazing, about this sanctuary that tells about what's going on. And there's sometimes comments, or I'm sure the staff gets a lot of emails or comments about, you know, oh, I just want to hug them and I'd love to snuggle them and all that. I think most of our followers realize now that that is definitely, it's a very hypothetical. It's not anything that anybody takes seriously anymore, because, you know, they are incredibly endearing and affectionate, and they form bonds and they have favorites amongst the caregivers and staff and volunteers. And they're very, very emotionally complex and incredibly intelligent, but they need to be honored for what they are, not what we want them to be or the type of interaction we want to have with them. So yeah. I've always been very impressed with the safety protocols that are in place here. I mean, even as a veterinarian, I went through, you know, the training of a volunteer in order to safely interact with the chimpanzees.
So as a veterinarian, you know, veterinarian to veterinarian, you know, I always wonder about disease and how prone they are to different diseases. And one of the things, because again, I looked through your website and I thought, oh, wow, maybe I could volunteer. Wouldn't that be cool? And then it just hit me. I mean, and I knew this, but I test positive for tuberculosis. Mm-hmm. And so that's just right out for me. So are there other diseases that we have to be concerned about?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of shared pathogens between chimpanzees and humans. We are very, very genetically similar. And so a lot of our enzyme systems and organ systems and physiology is very similar. As a matter of fact, I tend to partner with as many human medical professionals or medical professionals from the human medical field as I do with veterinarians, because the chimpanzees are so similar to. In addition to tuberculosis, which we all have to be tested every year for that, and just the simple cold or flu can really, not that the flu is simple by any means, but a head cold can become very serious for a chimpanzee. We've been very careful and strict with our COVID protocols. And as soon as COVID hit, we went to full, you know, N95 masks and just really a lot more strict. We test regularly here. We've been testing regularly since the beginning of the pandemic. If anybody is feeling badly, like they're coming down with something, we ask them not to interact with chimps and not to even come to work, if at all possible. So there are a lot of things. I was able to do some PCR, polymerase chain reaction testing on a number of different respiratory viruses to see what, and antibody testing as well, to see what the chimps may have been exposed to. And interestingly enough, there were several of the cold viruses, like adenoviruses and rhinoviruses and other coronavirus type viruses, that are implicated in respiratory illnesses that chimpanzees, our chimpanzees tested that they have had exposure to at one time or another. Doesn't mean they were symptomatic at all. It was more of a screening test, but none showed exposure to COVID, to the SARS-CoV-2 virus. So either our protocols are really, really good, or we don't know. We don't really know what their susceptibility is, but we're very delighted that so far none of the chimpanzees have tested positive for COVID. Well, antigen testing as well, to be sure.
For me, that brings up a question that I'm dying to hear the answer to. How do you take samples from the chimps?
Carefully. we have fantastic positive reinforcement training program here that allows us to collect some samples, like a cheek swab or a nasal swab, or even a fresh fecal swab sometimes from certain chimps. They're all a little bit different in what they will allow or tolerate. Some of our chimps are really, really into the positive reinforcement training. It's like big enrichment for them. You know, they're so, like Jamie and Honeybee are both so smart. And I think they just really thrive on learning those new things and interacting. It's really incredible. you know, for blood draws or things like that, at this point, they're done under a general anesthetic. And we don't do those as a matter of a routine. We do them on a either every 5-year basis or as indicated for a certain health condition. Obviously, in the case of an emergency where a chimp is injured and needs surgical intervention or treatment that has to be done under a general anesthesia, we will do that and collect as many samples as we can at that time. We can do as much testing as we possibly can while they're under anesthesia, as long as they are in doing well and are stable.
Of course, you touched on something that is near and dear to my heart, because you talked about positive reinforcement training. I am a convert to the clicker. I'm wondering what type of training methods that you use with the positive reinforcement.
Diana can probably speak to this better than I can. I'm not quite as involved, but I am involved in some of it. But the clicker is used, and I don't know enough about the nuances of positive reinforcement or operant conditioning training to give it a different label. What do you think?
It's really just similar to training other species. You know, we have our team read Don't Shoot the Dog and yeah. Other.
Let me just say that is a landmark book by Karen Pryor. And anyone who owns a dog or has a relationship with a person.
I've run across people who, because chimpanzees are so unique in so many ways, and, you know, we're trying to make sure that we in sanctuaries are providing for their individuality and their dignity, and we're here for them and not, you know, they're not here for us. So I know some people that I know in the past have really wondered about clicker training, because of the word training, you know, it's like we're trying to get them to do things for us. But like Aaron was saying, a lot of the chimps really enjoy it. I mean, part of it is the reward. And we are pretty strict with our diets, so, which is nice. The reward can be blueberries or like a little sip of sugar-free juice. And then with chimpanzees, because they're so smart, they just really enjoy trying out what you're looking for. And it's the same with a lot of dogs too. I think for dogs, there's a lot of like wanting to please their owners. With chimpanzees, it's very much, you know, you have to figure out what the motivation is for that individual. I know some chimps, the reward can even be having play time with a human, you know, a safe play time. So it's really enriching for the caregivers too. And it deepens our relationship with the chimps to be able to work with them in that way. And then just the obvious huge benefit is being able to get medical data without having to sedate them. And, you know, it can be, you know, dangerous to have a chimp under, just like it is with a human. Any anesthetic event is dangerous. And if we can get information without having to do that, then it's incredible and awesome. So we're looking to expand what we can get from them and hoping to be able to get heart monitoring and ultrasound and things like that.
Well, you do so much. One of the questions that has come up in relationship to, well, especially chimpanzees, but other species, is, well, why don't you just take them back to Africa? Why don't you just turn them back into the wild?
Yeah, we recently had a video of Foxy on Instagram and our blog, and she really likes dolls. And so it was this, you know, to our view, it was this very heartwarming video of giving her a new doll, and she immediately like hugged it to her chest. And it's really hard on social media to be able to provide the context. And we don't always realize we're not providing enough context, because often, you know, our posts just reach our followers, and our followers are very familiar with us. But this post, because of the content of it, reached all these people who had never heard of us and had, you know, have no idea what we're doing. And that was, I would say, one of the most common sentiments was, oh my gosh, this is so horrible. Like, why are you keeping this chimpanzee in a cage, and you need to set her free? So it has been tried. There's a book, and I know there was a really good Radiolab episode about a chimpanzee named Lucy. And she was used in the 70s in sign language research and lived in a human environment. And her owners decided that they wanted to give her a chance to live as a wild chimp, and so brought her to Africa. And it's a very tragic story. I really recommend people looking into it. And there's just so many reasons. Like, she had no idea how to forage for food. You know, she hadn't been around other chimps that much. And so I always think of, you know, if you took me and put me in the forest and said, good luck, I wouldn't last very long. And it's really the same thing. Like, chimpanzees are very socially oriented. And so when they grow up in more human environments, that's the culture that they adopt and the things that they learn. And if they haven't grown up in an environment as a wild chimpanzee, then they don't know that environment. They don't even know the social structures. That's why it can be really challenging even to introduce chimpanzees to one another in captivity if they haven't had that prior background of being with other chimps. So, and there's also, chimps in the wild are highly endangered. They're being poached illegally. Their habitat is being destroyed at an alarming rate. And it's even sanctuaries in Africa, in the areas where chimpanzees live, there's been some successful reintroductions, but it's hard to even find a place to reintroduce a wild chimpanzee.
So, I mean, you really do amazing work, and I'm wondering how people can help.
Well, we always welcome donations. We're run entirely off of individual donations and private grants. The best place to start, I would say, as Aaron mentioned, is to just go to our website and look at our blog. You really get a feel for the sanctuary and the personalities of the chimps, and no doubt you'll find one chimp that you relate to more than others and will fall in love with them. Although everyone falls in love with Burrito because he's hilarious. So donating, and we are actively looking for volunteers right now. And there, as you mentioned, we have information on our website about that, and there's different levels, and you start as helping in the kitchen and doing a whole lot of laundry. And we pretty much shut off our volunteer program during the pandemic, so we're just slowly building it back up now. Yeah. And just get to know our chimps, get to know chimps in general, and do what you can to help them.
I was just going to mention, we do have wish lists that are rotating, that are put out on the blog and on the website. So we always appreciate that if people can take a look at those, because a lot of the supplies, enrichment, food items or supplements can be donated. That's very helpful. And we do actually, Diana's runs a great fundraising program with some programs and auctions and things that are kind of fun, virtual visits and things like that. So it's not just sending money. Sometimes it's buying a fabulous piece of art that someone has donated, or a great restaurant gift card or something like that.
Well, I also want to mention that you have a store, a merchandise store online. And I looked at that, and there's some wonderful t-shirts with pictures of, you know, the various chimps. I mean, Honeybee and Burrito and all that. The one that caught my eye, I think, just came in a child size. And it says 98.76% chimp. I love that, because again, we are relatives.
Yeah, we love to have people walking around representing, because then people get curious. Yes. So whether it's a tumbler or a hoodie or a t-shirt.
So people can go to chimpsnorthwest.org. That's chimpsnw.org. And check you out. And there's several ways to donate. There's several ways to get involved. Anything you'd like to add before we take off?
No, you asked some great questions, and we really do appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, so good to meet you and good to talk with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So here's the bonus question and the answer. To repeat, today, little Frederick and his mother visited a school and a family. While they were there, they saw a band checked out the litter, and noticed a sleuth standing nearby. Later that day, they watched an army and a troop for quite a while and noticed they were standing beside a battery. As they were leaving to go home that day, Frederick and his mother saw a party just near the den and were indeed very happy. So, Frederick and his mother were at the zoo. So there was a school of fish, a family of otters, a band of gorillas, a litter of puppies, well, you knew that, right? A sleuth of bears, an army of caterpillars, or an army of frogs, a troop of kangaroos, or maybe a troop of baboons, a battery of barracudas, a party of jays, and a den of snakes. These animal group names are from a little book by James Lipton called An Exaltation of Larks. Some animal groups have several names. In fact, a group of puppies is sometimes called a piddle of puppies.
And, in keeping with this episode, a group of chimpanzees has many names. Among them are a troop, a tribe, a community, and maybe even a shimmer or a shrewdness. If you have issues or topics that you are wondering about, you can send your questions to info@radiotacoma.org. Please put Ain't Misbehavin' in the subject line. You can give as much information in the email as you wish. If your question is chosen, I will answer it in detail on the program. Join us again for more sagas from the world of pet behavior problems.
This is Dr. Louisa reminding you,
they ain't misbehaving, they're just behaving.
I don't stay out late, don't care to go. I'm home about eight, just me and my radio. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love.